Welcome to Paradise Found. I'm sure many listeners have read or have heard about the famous book, Paradise Lost, from the 17th century English poet John Milton. It is an epic poem in blank verse. The poem concerns the biblical story of the fall of man, the temptation of Adam and Eve by Satan, and the expulsion from the Garden of Eden. In this podcast, I present a viewpoint claiming the story of Adam and Eve is allegorical, and the paradise of Eden is a metaphor for the entire earth. So next time you are in your favorite place, close your eyes and imagine a paradise. Then open your eyes and realize that you have found it. Then consider what is causing our entire planet to not be a paradise. You will conclude the obvious, which is all the negative, evil actions of many, many, many people as the root cause. It's time to start working together, maximizing unity and expanding on the subject by discussing realistic and effective solutions. You can find more information in the directory of all my podcasts as they are released under my website for my book with the same title at www.paradisefoundbook.com. The book is divided into 12 chapters named after the months of the year with four podcast episodes per chapter.
Your Royal Highnesses, Your Majesties, Heads of State, Excellencies, Ladies and Gentlemen, distinguished guests, it is a great honor to be able to play a part in this opening ceremony of the 27th Conference of the Parties. Mr. President, thank you. Mr. Secretary General, thank you for your leadership of the entire world. We are all here today because we continue to use the thin blue shell of atmosphere surrounding our planet as an open sewer. Today, as every day, we are spewing 162 million tons of man-made heat-trapping global warming pollution into the sky. It adds up and accumulates and lingers there. On average, each molecule lingers 100 years, and the accumulated amount now traps as much extra heat as would be released by 600,000 Hiroshima-class atomic bombs exploding every day on our planet. That's why we're seeing these disasters. And the pattern is very clear. It's getting steadily worse. We have a credibility problem, all of us. We're talking, and we're starting to act, but we're not doing enough. It is a choice to continue this pattern of destructive behavior. We have other choices. In my faith tradition, I learned a teaching that is common to all three of the Abrahamic religions, that God has set before humanity a choice between blessings and curses, between life and death. We face that choice today. We can continue the culture of death that surrounds our addiction to fossil fuels by digging up dead life forms from eons ago and burning them recklessly in ways that create more death, including 8.7 million people every year that die from the air pollution, principally caused by the burning of fossil fuels. The curses that we are continuing to choose are ever more apparent. We saw them on that amazingly powerful film, one-third of Pakistan underwater, 1,700 people killed. A heat wave in China that lasted 70 days with the heat above 40 degrees, 104 Fahrenheit, over a vast area of China. Stronger storms, bigger downpours, rain bombs, worse floods. Another million displaced in Nigeria 2 weeks ago. Another million in Chad a few days after that. The Nile Delta being salinated, just as Hannibal's fields were salted. We are causing the salting of the greatest agricultural area in Egypt. as well as in the Mekong Delta and elsewhere. Droughts are drying up the mighty Mississippi River in my country, the Tigris and the Euphrates in the cradle of civilization, the Po River in Italy, the Loire in France, the Rhine in Germany. All over the world, the greatest reservoirs in North America, Lake Mead and Lake Powell, are reaching what is called Deadpool status. Starvation and famine in the Horn of Africa, devastation in Madagascar. And the areas of our world that are presently considered by doctors uninhabitable because of the combination of heat and humidity are relatively small today, but they are due to expand to the point where experts are predicting as many as 1 billion climate migrants crossing international borders in the balance of this century. Think of the millions that are crossing borders now and the xenophobia and authoritarian populism that is caused by a large surge of refugees. And then imagine, if you will, what 1 billion climate refugees would do. It would end the possibilities of self-governance. We have to act. We know that tragically, across the nations of Africa, these impacts are even worse, and in the Pacific Islands and elsewhere, and the poor suffer the most. The late Archbishop Desmond Tutu said, climate change is the apartheid of our times. We don't have to choose curses. We can choose blessings, including the blessings of renewable energy. We are now in the early stages of a sustainability revolution that has the magnitude of the Industrial Revolution and the speed of the digital revolution. If we invest in it and stop subsidizing the culture of death, we can save ourselves. Dollar for dollar, each dollar spent in renewable energy creates 3 times as many jobs as dollars spent in fossil energy. And this sustainability revolution is massively deflationary at just the time when the world is trying to find new ways to battle inflation. The International Energy Agency has called solar energy the cheapest energy in the entire history of the world. And Africa can be the renewable energy superpower.
Welcome to Paradise Found. And this is May, week number 2. And the title of this episode is The Real Inconvenient Truths. And what you just heard is Al Gore giving his opening speech to the 2022 UN Climate Change Conference. And I really, I couldn't stand to really listen to too much more of it, because he's really incorrect that solar and, you know, green energy and all this stuff isn't really going to move, the third world countries on the planet Earth forward, and a lot of other reasons, which I'll go into this episode. So hope you enjoy. So, what I mean by the real inconvenient truths, and there are many of them, which taking over the environmental movement, which I just spoke of, and they corrupted it. Politicians and the world leaders who only care about money and power hijacked the righteousness of the work of Emerson, Thoreau, Muir, Carson, and many, many others. It was very easy for them to install fear and hate into the masses in order to remain in control. Evil knows no bounds, and the way to defeat it is simply to expose it. Nothing is worse to someone like Klaus Schwab to be told to stop talking, please get off the stage. And everything you have said so far is irrelevant. The real inconvenient truth, which is the many people have to believed in, are fake. One of the biggest liars is Al Gore. So let's dissect his climate change hypothesis. I don't want to lose listeners who take climate change seriously and think the film Inconvenient Truth is accurate and truthful. What I have to say to them is that science is based on skepticism. If you're not a skeptic, you're not a scientist. Scientific hypotheses become a theory, and then the theory is tested over and over and over again until it becomes fact. And I can assure you with utmost confidence that man-made climate change may have made it to the theory stage, but is nowhere near to becoming scientific fact. This is not a story about attacking Al Gore, the person. He may seriously believe in what he says is true, but it's a problem for people to give him a platform without making sincere arguments. Gore is far from being a scientist, but let's dig into his main hypothesis. The film, An Inconvenient Truth, has about 5% which describes the hypothesis. I will play it now.
The assumption is something like this. The Earth is so big, we can't possibly have any lasting harmful impact on the Earth's environment. And maybe that was true at one time, but it's not anymore. And one of the reasons it's not true anymore is that the most vulnerable part of the Earth's ecological system is the atmosphere. Vulnerable because it's so thin. My friend, the late Carl Sagan, used to say, if you had a big globe with a coat of varnish on it, the thickness of that varnish relative to that globe is pretty much the same as the thickness of the Earth's atmosphere compared to the Earth itself. And it's thin enough that we are capable of changing its composition. That brings up the basic science of global warming, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this because you know it well. The sun's radiation comes in the form of light waves, and that heats up the Earth. And then some of the radiation that is absorbed and warms the Earth is re-radiated back into space in the form of infrared radiation. And some of the outgoing infrared radiation is trapped by this layer of atmosphere and held inside the atmosphere. And that's a good thing because it keeps the temperature of the Earth within certain boundaries, keeps it relatively constant and livable. But the problem is this thin layer of atmosphere is being thickened by all of the global warming pollution that's being put up there. And what that does is it thickens this layer of atmosphere. More of the outgoing infrared is trapped. And so the atmosphere heats up worldwide.
So basically, Gore's hypothesis is that the air pollution is making the Earth's atmosphere thicker, such that the infrared heat waves do not escape into space at so much, trapping heat and heating up the planet. So let's move his hypothesis up to a theory. In order to become a theory, we need to lay out what data, which is needed so that the theory can be tested. Einstein's general theory of relativity was highly criticized and seemed to have no possible way to prove by experimentation. Then, by I believe, which was provided by God, who made the moon the perfect size to block the sun during a solar eclipse. By measuring the locations of distant stars, which proved that the space-time is curved, it's a mind-blowing discovery for those who can understand this. It is very difficult scientific fact to comprehend. It took most of my life to really understand it after years of study. Not everyone will get it. I believe that many people who listen to Al Gore and take him seriously do not know the definition of science. It's simply what I described above, using the scientific method, which outlines how we take a hypothesis and make it into a theory. Then we test that theory and make it into a fact. The reason why I know that many people who respect Gore and Gore himself do not follow the scientific method is that he is not a scientist. Many people believe that there must be many reliable scientists who Gore consults with, and he is just a messenger to deliver this catastrophic message to the people. He made it easy for the people to understand with his film, which won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2007. Most people I know who believe in anthropogenic climate change believe it in such a high degree that they get emotionally upset when someone challenges their belief. Human beings can be controlled by their emotions. Our emotional responses are entirely the actions of the atoms and molecules that make up our biological robot bodies, I define in my February episodes. Our spiritual bodies govern over this, but it's so easy to just run on emotions. You can eliminate these diversions by simply believing in God. You may be fearful that you would be drawn into some sort of religious cult by reading and understanding the Bible, but in fact, you might already be in one. Your religion is a belief in people like the globalists, Al Gore, and others who preach what they call science, but it is not science. They are truly evil and simply need to be disregarded. I've spent hours arguing with people that anthropogenic climate change is not an urgent crisis, and there are realistic solutions to prevent it. Notice, I am not saying that climate change is not a potential threat. I'm just saying it has not been proven scientific fact, and I am accusing Al Gore and others of falsely taking credit and propping themselves up in order to impress you. It is not uncommon for political leaders to do this. Obama said many times many things which he did not act upon. Biden actually memorized and plagiarized many great speakers. Gore uses science, but he's not a scientist. There was no scientist in his film, An Inconvenient Truth, showing the data and the experimental results to prove Gore's theory. Today, carbon dioxide comprises approximately 0.041% of the Earth's atmosphere. Gore's theory is based on the fact that these carbon atoms, if they were underground, and as people pump them out of the ground and burn them as fossil fuels, they are adding additional carbon atoms, combining with oxygen to form carbon dioxide molecules. And if we did not burn fossil fuels, then these carbon atoms would remain underground and not make the atmosphere too thick. But these carbon atoms were always on Earth, and the atmosphere's composition is not changing to the degree enough to cause a significant warming that Gore is claiming to have disastrous effects. The 0.041% has an insignificant effect on trapping heat. On the other hand, water vapor makes up approximately one-third of the atmosphere, and if it increased significantly, it would cause a greenhouse effect. What really is damaging to the whole theory is the study of the medieval warming period from 900 to 1200 AD. There is archaeological evidence that the Vikings worked farms on Greenland, which today is covered with ice and snow. This proves that it is most likely that the fluctuations in the amount of energy from the sun is the root cause of any warming or cooling periods on Earth. It's almost an obvious no-brainer if you consider the reverse cooling period, like the Ice Age. If you believe that carbon dioxide can warm the planet, then the lack thereof would cool it to the same degree. Just like all the evolutionary biologists who wasted their time trying to prove the origin of life and man originated from evolution, climate change scientists have also come to a dead end. Neither group will admit it, because if they did, it'll expose their quackery. Billions of dollars will be lost in research grants from the federal government if they do. Basically, how this started was that they desperately wanted to rid the Earth of air pollution, and they seized upon this cooked-up theory to end it. This political strategy is very common, and they see it as a way to wake up the masses, almost like creating a religious cult, so they can gain political power to make a sweeping changes. But what they are doing will not work. The evolutionary biologists won't come out and say that all their research is junk and the only explanation for the origin of life is there has to be a God. Their silence keeps religion out of the schools and people from growing their spirituality towards our one and only God. People seek out quack scientists as idols in the meaningless religions like the Gaia worship. 90% of the film, The Inconvenient Truth, is based on instilling fear, just like the recording of Gore in 2022 summit I played. He goes over glaciers that have melted and cities that get flooded. Real scientists have proven that the sea rise is not an issue. And what if the glaciers also melted during the medieval warming period? No, it's pretty boring hearing world leaders talk over and over about these so-called serious problems. That is why many pictures of them falling asleep in the audience. When they are not asleep, you can see in their eyes that they know that they have something great to control the masses, and they are the masters. We need to get rid of all of them. The word denier has become a favorite with the progressive cult. They have the intellectual capacity of a child with zero mental ability to criticize their masters. Today, it's either climate change denier or election fraud denier, with no look at the evidence or scientific data which proves them wrong. I'd go so far that our elections have been scientifically proven to be fraudulent, which means that anyone that does not look at this proof is the real denier. If I have not shown even the most ardent believer in the propaganda of climate change, the one single fact will. Even today, they do not talk how they are going to solve this problem. They blab and blab about why it's important, and anyone that disagrees with them is an arrogant bastard. They are wrong, and they do not know what they are doing other than loving being at the center stage. Do not be fooled. And the answer in solving this problem is right here. It was easy to watch the film An Inconvenient Truth and not be impressed with Al Gore's presentation. I respected his analysis and did believe that what he's saying might be true. I said that I might believe that in him because of science is all, but because science is all about criticism. I did not take much effort to learn his hypothesis was not based on science, it's based on a political agenda. It is not too hard to know when someone is insincere in preaching ideas to the public for self-gain. It's the exact same personality of the classmate you had, drawing attention to him or herself to become more popular and have more friends. You will notice that they will seem to enjoy what they are speaking about, and they are extremely confident. Scientists, the good ones, never speak like this. If Al Gore was an honest, humble speaker who is relaying the information from scientists that were also concerned about this problem, then these people would take a big role in the film. Gore would have them explain their findings and data. Instead, we just get Gore, who made millions of dollars on speaking engagements. He is laughing all his way to the bank. While many people respect him, he needs to be discarded, figuratively, into the ash heap of history. He is 100% fake, and the people should have known about him when he claimed to invent the internet. To further put this issue to rest and stop listening to people like Al Gore, or Joe Biden, this is not a climate change problem. It is a problem of carbon dioxide pollution. Everyone would agree to eliminate air pollution. Why not focus on that? I'm not going to say what I think the globalists should do. They simply need to just go away. A sincere and honest leader would focus on eliminating air pollution and would provide a realistic pathway to that end. It would schedule a ramp down on the use of fossil fuels, such that it would not create a negative effect on the world's economy. The globalists, however, want to place blame and instill hate, and they have no idea what to do. The result is that not only does the economy tank, but they do nothing to reduce air pollution, as Nancy Pelosi is still stuffing ice cream from her fancy refrigerator. America can easily lead the world in eliminating air pollution, and I discussed this already in earlier episodes. Bottom line, the conversion to green energy needs to be a well thought out process, which they are not doing. They are going to drive the world into a hell. So listen up. Here's what we need to do. First, we need to perfect nuclear energy with no waste pollution, 100% safe and effective. Second, we can implement interim solutions by creating more power plants that run on natural gas. It's exciting, the things we can do, but very depressing to have people in power who only care about themselves. And again, they need to pack their bags and remove themselves from the brainstorming panel. Energy that comes from the sun is nuclear. Our sun is equivalent to hundreds of thousands of hydrogen bombs blowing up every second, heating up the earth, and the pressure gradients cause wind. Problem with both wind and solar is the elements, and also they take up the open space. I believe solar will remain useful on rooftops of homes and buildings, and probably perhaps roadway and bicycle path as pavers, but it should never be used to take over wide open spaces. It not only takes up too much space, but the equipment decays and needs to be replaced too quickly and destroys habitat and kills birds. Ditto with windmills. Bottom line, all the energy comes from matter with equation E equals mc squared, or chemical energy from chemical reactions. If we could create a safe, effective, non-polluting nuclear power plant, that would probably be the best, most likely way for humanity to move forward and create our paradise. I wanted to start this corruption of the environmental movement because it is the largest, most devastating power grab by the deep state globalists, and this is one which we will create a hell on earth. There are many others. Let's go back to Rachel Carson. I don't believe we need to focus on health problems caused by pollutants. Again, this political strategy to use fear to gain followers. Al Gore uses melting glaciers and flooded cities to install fear. People who support Rachel Carson argue that these chemicals and pesticides are going to make us sick, as many do, and many do cause great harm to the environment. However, this is not getting rid of the hundreds of billions of dollar industry. Again, science is science, and proving that chemical causes cancer is extremely difficult and time-consuming. Time we don't have. It's time to take a different approach. And there is the fact that we don't need many of these chemicals, biotech, GMO, or any of it, period. I discussed this in other earlier episodes, that Roundup is a useless product and we've been brainwashed to buy it. That's what marketing professionals of large companies do, that they are the snake oil salesmen from the old West, and they have never gone away. And we have many people who pretend to be concerned environmentalists, giving up on Rachel Carson's fight. There are some people who consider Carson a nutcase, and that is because of the proof of the negative health effects from chemicals. It is sort of a risk-benefit experiment that we do not have to engage in at all. Because of her certain place and time, she has awakened everyone to this threat. But we need to honor her by eliminating the chemical and biotech industry and its place in academia. We do not need to go overboard here. There are many useful chemicals which do safely dissipate and do not cause harm in the environment. But all chemicals and pesticides that should be banned that do not dissipate and do cause harm. There is a disadvantage between organic farms and factory farms. If we ban factory farms and harmful pesticides, it will raise the food prices, but it'll be well worth it to prevent long-term health risks. Factory farms, chemicals, pesticides have no place in our paradise. Then we have the biotechnology and genetically modified organism industry, which also have no place in our paradise. We're playing around with perfection. You can argue that we can alter DNA of an organism to make it superior, but in fact, you're not making it superior. You're merely changing it. Nature has been changing and modifying DNA molecules of organisms since the beginning of time. For example, you might develop a strain of potato which is resistant to the mold that caused the potato famine of 1845. But again, nature can change on a dime, and it can create a new mold that's even more destructive to your new potato that you're so proud that you have created. It's basically you are wasting your time and you're engaging in an unrighteous scientist. 1 week ago, as I speak, recording this episode, religious leaders around the world met at the United Nations COP27 Climate Change Summit in Sinai, Egypt, and they gather to repent their quote-unquote climate sins and to unveil a new universal Ten Commandments in hope of a new moral code for the future. There was so much criticism about it because do they really think their Ten Commandments should replace the original ones from the Bible, handed down from God? They immediately changed the name after that to the 10 principles of climate repentance. Just the fact that they wasted the word 10 commandments really puts into question what their motive is, and it makes them appear as a religious cult. And this cult is not based on a political agenda from an unproven hypothesis of anthropogenic climate change. Again, this problem can be solved by world leaders by discussing the best way to end air pollution without harming the world economy, not creating a religious cult of people doing nothing other than these ridiculous commandments. And I like to read these 10 commandments, what they came up with. The first one is, we are stewards of this world. The second, creation manifests divinity. Number three, everything in life is interconnected. Number four, do no harm. Number five, look after tomorrow. Number six, rise above ego for our world. Number seven, change our inner climate. Number eight, repent and return. Number nine, every action matters. And number 10, use mind, open heart. I have no comment on these principles because to me, they are completely meaningless. Let's remind ourselves of the real 10 commandments, which are, number one, you shall have no other gods before me. Number two, you shall not make yourself a carved image or any likeness or anything that in the heaven above or that is in the earth beneath or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am the only worthy of worship, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and to the fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing steadfast love to thousands of those who love me and keep me my commandments. Number three, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord of God will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. Number four, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath day to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do work, you or your son or your daughter or your servant or your livestock or a sojourner who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heaven and earth, the sea, and all that's in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Number five, honor your father and mother, that your days may be long in the land of the Lord of your God is giving you. Number six, you shall not murder. Number seven, you shall not commit adultery. Number eight, you shall not steal. Number nine, you should not bear false witness against your neighbor. And number 10, you should not covet your neighbor's house. You should not covet your neighbor's wife or his male servant or his female servant or his ox or his donkey or anything that is your neighbor's. In my opinion, these commandments cover everything we need and sort of the bedrock of, you know, how we need to live our lives. And then there's such beauty and intelligence that only God have created these commandments. Everything about the 10 principles of climate repentance are problems which are covered in the Bible. There are several places in the Bible where we are called to be stewards over the earth. We have been tasked that, and I have to agree that we failed. We won't succeed by following people who are trying to create this new religious cult, and it's degrading from the our environmental movement. I'd like to further comment on what some of the commandments mean to me and why I think they are were created and how it ties into my book and my podcast, it will be easy to see why the real Ten Commandments are extremely meaningful. First, we have to worship one God, because although there may be angels or other powerful spiritual beings in heaven, one God has to be in control. Once you start thinking there's more than one God, or many gods, like in the Greek mythology, you immediately question which God is the right one to listen to, which God is right. With one God, there's no confusion. There's only one way, and only one way to live a righteous life, and any other way is wrong. So no one can tell you how to live your life, because that is your struggle to overcome and figure out that puzzle. The second commandment follows up on the first by stating that you should not make a carved image of any other likenesses from the heavens above, or the soil beneath, or the water below, etc. I think this was provided noting that there are spirits in heaven, and there are spirits in hell, and they never should be thought of as God, because I believe that these heavenly spirits and angels can only, the heavenly spirits and angels can only do good and never interfere with people on earth. Otherwise, they would no longer reside in heaven. But evil spirits exist in hell, and we must do everything we can to avoid them. And then in the process of fighting them off with the energy of love makes us stronger. The third, using the word God in vain is simply wrong, because doing so means that you don't believe in them, in him. I don't think this applies to, you know, people often say the phrase, oh my God, or the phrases which people habitually do. It really refers to the biblical times when people really use the word God in vain because they did not believe in him. It puts in the question, who do you believe in? Do you believe in the UN climate change panel? Does their Ten Commandments help you lead a righteous life? Or the UN's climate repentances? This is a big problem and a source of corruption within the environmental movement, because it's not a religious movement, it's a righteous movement. The progressive deep state globalists are making it into a religious movement, because they haven't a clue what to do exactly. They just know they want to be the head of the effort, with you following them like a religious cult. The fourth is just making Sunday a day of rest and showing reverence to God. The fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth are pretty straightforward. Relating this in my February episodes, you can see how violating any one of these would divert you from living a righteous life and enlightening your spirit. Honor your father and mother. Don't murder anyone. Don't do adultery. Don't steal. And don't bear false witness against your neighbor. The last one, do not covet. I think some people might not understand what's really important. Obviously, if your neighbor drives up in a brand new car, a car that if you always wanted, you would be tempted to covet it. But there is one thing everybody does when they covet something or someone. They're wasting their precious time. So if you really want to live a righteous life, you live every day to the fullest, and you never waste a second on coveting. So this concludes the episode of the Environmental Movement Gone Wrong, Part 1. In Part 2, I continue with other issues which have made the movement weak and ineffective. And so in May's fourth week episode, I explain how we can make this movement so strong that it will make creating a paradise over the entire earth a reality. Harness the power of love, live each day to the fullest, and make your life a righteous and enlightening one. Thanks for listening.